I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Brian Egolf. He's state representative from District 47. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Good morning, everybody.
So we're continuing our conversation on gun violence. We started that yesterday. What does the gun violence problem in New Mexico look like today?
Well, there's a lot of aspects to it. You see that New Mexico suffers from the same problems that other states do in terms of especially handgun violence used in crime. And that's the reason that I'm very pleased that the state house has passed on a bipartisan basis House Bill 77, which was changed from its initial form, but still does what's called closing the gun show loophole. It'll require background checks for all firearms sold at gun shows. It may not sound like a big deal, but the statistics are very clear that states that enact this kind of law see a major reduction, over a 65% reduction in the exportation of illegal guns. So we make it harder for guns to be purchased for resale to criminals. And it has a huge effect because that trafficking in illegal firearms leaves New Mexico and goes elsewhere. So it makes a big and immediate dent in the issue and is a major public safety move. So that's a good thing that the legislature has done.
It's very interesting because one has this kind of NRA perpetrated mythology that you buy a gun at a gun show to protect your home or something like that. But really what we're talking about is a market, a resale market.
Sure. So what happens is, and there are people who, lots of people that go to gun shows and purchase a firearm from a licensed dealer at a gun show and undergo a background check. And that's the way it is now, and that's the way it will continue to be if House Bill 77 becomes law. What also happens, though, is individuals will go to a gun show with the intent of not buying one firearm, but with the intent of buying 20 or 30. They then plan to take those firearms off-site and will end up at a motel parking lot or some other place selling those firearms out of the trunk of their car to people who could not otherwise pass a background check. These are referred to as straw purchasers, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives has identified these gun shows as a major source of illegal weapons. And it's important for listeners to understand, we talk about illegal firearms, and that means guns that were acquired illegally by criminals for use in crime. Well, there's no such thing as an illegal gun factory. In other words, every illegal gun began its existence as a legal firearm. And that conversion from a legal firearm to an illegal one very often takes place through a gun show. And what we're doing with this legislation is trying to cut off that supply and make it harder for straw purchasers and others acting illegally to get their hands on weapons that they shouldn't have.
Up until now, not having those kinds of laws and having basically a free-for-all where almost anybody can get a gun if they want, virtually anybody can get a gun if they want one, how has that affected the rate of death and injury by gun in New Mexico?
State-based specifics are difficult to come by simply because of the way things are reported through the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. But what you can see are national numbers. And what we see are incidents all across the country. Just in the last, when we were debating the bill on the House floor, I read through a list that was about 7 pages long of everyone from firefighters, police officers, and everyday citizens murdered with the use of a firearm obtained at a gun show without a background check. So the numbers are substantial, and the federal statistics will show that about 30% or more of gun crime is tied in one way or another to firearms that were obtained without a background check at a gun show. So this is a major, closing the gun show loophole is a major step in the right direction.
Very, very interesting. Now, tell us about other legislation that is being introduced this session on each side of the gun issue and the status of the various bills.
So I'm not aware of any gun violence legislation that's been introduced in the Senate. There was one gun-related bill in the Senate that I know of that would have allowed teachers to carry concealed weapons in schools, and that bill was just defeated in a Senate committee, so we don't have to worry about that one, which is good, because that was very, very deeply misguided legislation. In the House, Representative Easley, representing El Dorado, introduced a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. I was a supporter of that legislation. I was a co-sponsor. Unfortunately, that bill failed to pass its first committee on a vote of 3-2. So that bill is done for the session, I'm afraid. House Bill 77 remains the only bill alive at this point. One thing that gives me hope for its passage is that Governor Martinez, to her credit, has said publicly that she will sign House Bill 77 if it reaches her desk. And that is one of the reasons that we were able to get a number of Republicans to support the bill. And I hope that the knowledge that the governor supports it will help House Bill 77 get through the Senate.
Now, there's also legislation like a bill that would allow, and this is one that, in my view, makes New Mexico seem like one of those crazy Wild West states, but would allow concealed weapons into bars where alcohol is served all night.
Right. I think that bill has an extraordinarily remote chance of passing, not only because it's a bad idea, but also it's being offered in the wake of all of these terrible tragedies, these mass shootings. I just don't think there's much appetite for expanding concealed carry, especially into places with full liquor licenses. It just defies logic, and I don't expect it would pass.
I would imagine that in the state legislature this session, the tragic murder of the Griego family by one of the sons in that family is playing a role in legislators thinking about gun violence. Is that a topic of conversation?
It has been, because we all know former Senator Eric Griego, and this, of course, was his brother's family that was killed by, even more tragically, one of Senator Griego's nephews. Well, and that has certainly been top of mind as we look at the issues. The debate over that, or rather the discussion over that, often comes back to not just the ban on assault weapons, but also the important component of mental health and counseling and early intervention and funding for mental health care, so that people who are disturbed are able to get the help that they need before there is an event like the one that took those lives in the South Valley. There is a good mental health care component in House Bill 77, and the hope there is that if it passes, that the reporting of this information will be improved, and we'll be able to make sure that or take a good step in the direction of preventing these very, very deeply disturbed people from getting access to these kinds of weapons.
You are sitting in the middle of the state legislature, you're in the state house, and you're seeing constituents come to you and people going to committee meetings. What does it look like? What does it feel like? Is there kind of equal support and opposition for gun control or anti-gun violence laws?
In terms of the people that show up, I have to say the NRA and the gun enthusiasts, the folks that are opposed to any form of firearms safety legislation, do make a much bigger showing. I don't exactly know why that is, but it really does. For the hearing on the ban on assault weapons, the opponents of the bill were much, much more visible. And the NRA really does a very good job of mobilizing the NRA's supporters to appear in committee hearings. For that reason, as House Bill 77, the gun show loophole bill, as that gets scheduled, I think it's going to be very important for people who support the legislation to keep that in mind and to make sure that they're doing what they can to come to the State House and show their support, because we really, really need it. And presence in those committee rooms makes a big difference when members of the committee decide how to vote. And so I'd sure encourage a lot of folks from town to head on over to the Capitol when that bill gets scheduled.
Do we know yet when it is scheduled?
We don't yet know. I expect that when it gets scheduled, we'll see some notice of that in the local papers, which would be very helpful. And maybe you and the other folks at KSFR can put that out so that people can be aware that it's coming.
Yes, we will let people know as best we can on this show and on other shows on KSFR. What are some facts about guns in New Mexico and gun violence that you would like people to know?
That small changes can make a big impact, and I'll just bring it back to the statistics about closing this gun show loophole really starts to turn off the supply of illegal firearms, and this is going to be an ongoing effort. So we may not get everything we need in this legislative session, but we'll certainly continue to work on it. The fact that even if House Bill 77 makes it through the legislature, you can today walk over and buy firearms with 30-round or more capacity, by armor, Teflon-coated, armor-piercing bullets designed for nothing else than killing police officers who are wearing protective vests. I think those things I find shocking. And I hope that lots of other New Mexicans find it shocking that you can buy Teflon-coated, armor-piercing rounds to kill police officers. That needs to stop. And it's tragic that the bill didn't make it through this session, but we'll keep it going and make sure that we're doing everything we can to get it through, if not the next session, then the one after that, because we can't let this effort stall.
It does seem like in the wake of all the incidents that have happened really close to each other on a national level that the tide is kind of turning from the way it's been over the last 20, 30 years.
The public opinion surveys show that support for universal background checks is in excess of 90%, even among households that own a firearm. So that is there. That is what in politics you think of as a no-brainer in terms of public support. In spite of that, there is a grossly disproportionate fear among elected officials of the National Rifle Association. And the NRA, unfortunately, was able to get enough support mobilized to stop the universal background check, which is how we ended up with the gun show background check bill. When you get into other issues like assault weapon bans and limiting the size of magazines for ammunition, the support drops off, but not tremendously. When you talk about limiting magazines to 10 rounds, the support there is in the mid to upper 70s. So it's still a great deal of support. When you get into assault weapon bans, the support drops down to about 50%. But we could still do a lot with the universal background check and limiting the size of these magazines. And I think that's going to be the focus as we go forward.
And also the mental health component seems like such an important piece of the whole thing, because disturbed people, if they can get help, might not pick up their daddy's gun and go shoot somebody.
Well, there's that, and there's also the that's the funding component. So we need to make sure that we're funding mental health at the levels that are necessary in order for there to be the help that people need. That's one piece. The other piece is getting correct and up-to-date information into the database. That part is what's dealt with by House Bill 77, to make sure that as people are adjudicated to have lost their right to possess a firearm, that that information makes it into the database, because, of course, the database is only as good as the information contained in it. So there's a big piece in there to get substantial federal funding to improve the quality of the information and the timeliness of the information that we're submitting to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. And there's also raised with the mental health issue serious constitutional due process issues, because the Supreme Court has ruled finally that the Second Amendment does, in fact, give an individual right to keep and bear arms. So that is the law of the land. The same Supreme Court that upheld the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has also told us that the Second Amendment conveys an individual right. So when we start discussion about restricting that right for those who may have mental health issues, the Constitution requires that there be some ability for them to either challenge the determination that they're no longer eligible to possess a firearm and have some process to get those rights restored. That is, you know, that is a that is absolutely contained in the bill that we passed, and as long as the Supreme Court maintains its position that there's an individual right to keep and bear arms, we have to keep the constitutional issues of due process in mind, and I think this House Bill 77 strikes that balance appropriately.
Now, there have been activists coming to the Roundhouse, the state capital of New Mexico, basically with openly displayed guns on their bodies. Is that legal? Is that normal? What are you seeing?
That is legal. In New Mexico, we are an open carry state, meaning you can be in public virtually anywhere and be carrying a firearm. You do have to have a permit for a firearm to be concealed, but an open carry is permitted. The law does not restrict that in the state capitol. So it is legal for there to be firearms carried openly in the state capitol. Yeah.
Very interesting. What kind of an atmosphere does that set up at the state capitol?
Personally, I have not witnessed it. I've not seen it. I've seen photos of people outside the Capitol, but I've not seen it myself inside. And but you can imagine if your firearms are brought into a committee room that they, you know, may be brought in for the purpose of intimidating members of the legislature into voting a certain way. That, of course, is not something that we should tolerate. And there has been a proposal introduced to restrict the carrying of firearms in the state capitol. I'm not sure how that's gonna go, but I think if it's seen as a way to prevent people from intimidating legislators during session, then I think that's maybe an appropriate thing to do. But I also, you know, have a thought that, you know, that I personally have not felt threatened during the session. And so I'm not on the committee that's going to make the decision on whether firearms are allowed in the Capitol or not. I think that's going to be an interesting discussion to hear, though, and see where my colleagues come out on that.
Brian Egolf is state representative from District 47. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and we will keep our listeners up to date on this ongoing issue.
It's my pleasure, and thanks for your interest.
And I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Lois Rudnick. She is co-founder of Mothers Opposed to Mayhem, also known as MOMS. She's a member of New Mexicans for Gun Safety, and she's professor emerita of American Studies at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much, Mary Charlotte.
And so we've had you here talking about artists of New Mexico and talking about Mabel Dodge Lujan and syphilis and all kinds of subjects. And now here we are today talking in our second day in a row about guns and gun violence in the United States. How did you become so passionate about this topic?
Well, for myself, as for many other people in this country, especially mothers and grandmothers, it was the Newtown shooting of 20 first grade children, most of whom had 6 bullets that had penetrated their bodies. When I heard about it, I was in a complete state of shock and horror. All I could see was my 6-year-old beautiful Hannah, my granddaughter, sitting in her first grade classroom on Bainbridge Island and some madman coming in and killing her. And I said, I've been concerned about gun control my whole life. I've never done a single blessed thing about it. So I organized a small vigil in El Dorado the day after the shooting, and this was generated by Move On that asked people, members around the country, to do this. And a friend of mine called me the next day, a friend I've known for 45 years, who had spent part of her life working in a DA's office that had dealt with mass shootings in Massachusetts. She said, "You and I have to do something." She came up with Moms, the name. And we said, let's try to create one day, 1 hour, when we ask people all over the country who love children to come together on March 10th between noon and 1 and let their legislators know that we are supporting all of them who are supporting the kind of legislation that Obama is trying to get through for universal background checks and banning assault weapons and large magazines that carry capacities of more than 10 pieces of ammunition and mental health care and all of those issues. Let them know we will support them. Let them know that this is a bottom line issue for us. Let those who are as Representative Brian said, are above and beyond fearful of the power, the real power that the NRA still has. And let them know that this is a bottom line issue for us in the next election, both at the U.S. congressional level and the local level.
I think it's so interesting that this is becoming a women's issue and not just a mother's issue, although certainly that, and many women, not all, are mothers. But there are so many cases of domestic violence where women are victimized by guns.
Absolutely. We have a on our Facebook page, which I'm happy to give you to put on the podcast for this show, we have a gun quiz that one of the many anti-gun violence groups in America has put up. That's quite astonishing. I did very poorly on it. I got a 75%. I was shocked and upset with myself.
75% is poor only for professors.
It's true. It's a B minus. You know, I shouldn't be getting B minuses at this stage in my life when I'm a retired professor. One of the questions was, you know, what kind of role do guns play in domestic abuse and domestic violence situations? And it turns out that there's a 500% greater chance for a woman to get killed if there's a gun in the house during a domestic abuse or domestic violence or quarrel situation. I was shocked by that statistic. So this is definitely a woman's issue. I have found many people responding to the vigil that we're going to have on March 10th here at the Santa Fe Plaza, sponsored by Mayor Koss's office, who have thanked me on behalf of their grandchildren. Most of the women I know are my age cohort, in their 60s, in their 70s, and they have thanked me on behalf of their grandchildren. I'm hoping that we get mothers as well and young children, because I think this is an every generation issue. This is obviously this is fathers and grandfathers, as well as single women who have nieces and nephews and who love children.
Now, what is New Mexicans for Gun Safety?
Well, we began as 2 separate organizations, again, just after the Newtown killings, and we joined forces last week, and finally this week actually chose the name New Mexicans for Gun Safety. We're 111 citizens of New Mexico, mostly Santa Feans, by my count as of this morning, and we have been working vigilantly, attending hearings at the Roundhouse. We are right now most particularly involved in supporting Representative Miguel Garcia's House Bill 77, that would enact background checks at gun shows, which is now in the Senate and in the Senate Public Affairs Committee. And we've been going to these hearings. We've been calling our legislators. I have a list of the senators who are on the Public Affairs Committee. This bill is presumably going to come up for a hearing this week. At the Senate Public Affairs Committee, and hopefully be passed through onto the Senate floor before the legislative session is finished.
You have been at the State House, and before we went on the air, you were talking to me about the paid NRA lobbyists mm-hmm. who are there. What is the atmosphere like in these committee rooms?
Well, you know, the first experience I had at the Roundhouse on my first day for the first hearing of HB 77 was, most of my experiences have been actually standing in line waiting for these sessions to begin. And I just, you know, very genuinely got into line. There were about 200 people there that day, and I had no idea what proportion of them were, you know, gun lobbyists or gun owners and what proportion were supporting this bill. And I got into line and I turned friendly and with a friendly smile to the man behind me and said, "So are you here to support House Bill 77 or oppose it?" And he said to me, "Well, oppose it, of course." And I said, "What could be more necessary or important or less controversial than having background checks on those who buy guns? If they're legitimate citizens who have no violent criminal record, no mental health issues that have been noted anywhere, why wouldn't you want a background check?" He said to me, "Do you know what background checks will lead to?" And I said, "In all innocence, no. Tell me." He said, "Genocide."
What did he mean? Do you know what he meant, or did you ask him?
Well, when we were listening to your program yesterday and to Levitt talking about these issues, he talked about a kind of right-winged terror. He called them insurrectionists, people who think that any kind of gun legislation, no matter how innocent sounding or necessary or inoffensive it might be, will eventually lead to the United States government coming into citizens' homes and taking away their guns and destroying their freedoms. I hear the word genocide, and I think of the Holocaust, I think of Rwanda, and I was so appalled by this statement, because this is what this man was saying. This is the entering wedge of fascism. This is Obama, you know, Hitler and Stalin's counterpart. That I said to him, I can't talk to you anymore. And then we had an altercation that I'd rather not discuss on the radio.
We're talking to Lois Rednick.
That was one episode in terms of discomfort. I came back for two more times for other hearings, one on the assault weapons bill, which unfortunately, as Brian E. Golf just has recently noted, didn't make it out of committee. And standing in line for a long time, talking to many people. In essence, I was going through the line to see how many of us are sort of gun control supporters and how many of us are NRA lobbyists or gun supporters. And I would say Egolf was quite right. My sense is it was like 10 to 1 NRA gun supporters versus those of us who were there to lobby in support of these anti-assault weapon and high-capacity magazine bills and H.R. 77. And one of the things that I did not experience directly, though I saw it, was hostility from people who were armed in the Roundhouse. And I knew that it was legal to carry guns into the Roundhouse openly without a permit before I got there. But I have to say it was tremendously disconcerting to see large men with guns that they were carrying openly in a state house where laws are taking place, where civil discourse is supposed to be happening. And one of my colleagues in our New Mexicans for Gun Safety group was standing near, close to a man who was wearing his guns, and heard him say, he was 50 feet in front, away from her, "We could have taken, why didn't they take out Obama when they could have?" And she's reported this subsequently to the FBI, and they've said to her, "Well, there's nothing we can do because you don't have a picture of him or his name." And she said, "Well, I wasn't about to take a photograph with my iPhone of someone who was wearing guns." Representative Easley talked to me about men with guns, let us say, going into his office and intimidating his staffers, which I thought was appalling. He's one of the co-sponsors of the House Bill 77 that Brian Eagolf is also a co-sponsor on. And I think that we have to address this. I absolutely think, having talked to two of my colleagues now who have said to me, they feel that people aren't coming to the Roundhouse, are the people who agree that there need to be more controls for gun safety in New Mexico, that there need to be restrictions on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, that there need to be universal background checks, not just gun show background checks, that people would be intimidated by this atmosphere of people walking around, strutting around, showing off their guns. I said to one man while I was waiting for a committee hearing who was wearing NRA buttons, I said, it's your lobbyists pay you to be here from morning until night and from 15 hours a day if you have to stay. We're not paid to do this. He said, you're darn right, and some of my dues go for that, and I'm proud of it.
It's an interesting moment because it's a moment where you basically have that which society is there to really mitigate, namely a kind of display of primate dominance.
Yes.
In which the big guy with the most ability to hurt others feels
right.
that he or his cohort can rule.
Exactly.
And I think one of the reasons that we have government and that we have social contracts is so that we don't have to live by a kind of might makes right,
right.
mentality and reality.
Right. And the gun companies that sell the guns and that primarily fund the NRA, beside the dues they get from their members, their ads are so clearly psychologically referencing needs, associating guns with masculinity. So the Bushmaster people, that was one of the guns used in the Newtown killings, for example, has an advertisement on their website that says, get your man card. And if a man takes a quiz showing he's truly masculine, he gets a man card proving he's man enough to carry a Bushmaster. Gun companies have started, this is from a New York Times article on selling a new generation on guns, using children to sell guns. This is a gun ad here I have in my hands, Make Dad Jealous. It has a 6 or 7 year old girl. For less than $300, you can own an authentic 1911 reproduction in a 22 LR and spend the day shooting and improving your skills without emptying dad's wallet. Available through your local gun store. She's 7 years old.
Right.
People should take a look at the gun ads on these gun company websites. They're horrifying.
I think one of the realities that we're facing, and I've certainly been observing this my entire adult life, is that a lot of what passes for politics boils down to fundamental differences on gender issues.
Yes, it does.
And hypermasculinity at this point is associated with all kinds of right-wing things like militarism, gun ownership,
right.
anti-homosexuality,
right.
anti-reproductive rights, anti-women's rights, and
right.
in really basic ways. And the other side is like, hey, man, we're all equal.
Right, exactly. I think that, it's been very interesting to see recently posted on various anti-gun violence websites, and there have to be at least 15 national organizations out there now that are posting constantly, and I take the best and put them on my Facebook page. There's a very powerful ad that has been posted by mayors opposed to illegal guns. There are 850 mayors who have joined this organization. Mayor Cost tells me 6 of them are from the state of New Mexico, I'm proud to say. And they have 6 retired admirals and generals demanding a plan, a support of what the Obama administration has come out with, what the Mayors Against Illegal Guns have come out with. Very powerful. 30-second ad, some of the most prestigious retired admirals, generals in our nation's military. There are now ads by gun owners, Vietnam veterans and veterans of other wars that you can find on YouTube that are demanding restrictions of semi-automatic weapons, universal background checks. So there are people who are gun owners who are proudly coming out and saying, they're not saying in these words, but they're saying it doesn't make you a man to support the need to own weapons that only need to be used. Their only intention is to be used to kill masses of people. And these are weapons that were once military that have now been militarized by gun sellers for the civilian market.
I mean, these are, just to make it really clear, these are weapons of war.
Yes, they are, that have been adapted for civilian use, partly because the guns that, there used to be a large number of Americans that hunted. The last survey that was done by the National Fish and Game found, when they asked people how many of you hunted this year, it was 5% of Americans. No one is trying to take a regular hunting gun away from of an American. And some of these most powerful ads show hunters, who are a tiny proportion of our population now. So the gun people aren't making money selling hunting weapons anymore, are not enough money, so they transform these militarized weapons. And if you read about why these weapons were created for the military, it's horrific. It's because most soldiers who fight in war have no idea who and what they are shooting. They need guns that spray ammunition and that when they get into a body, open up and destroy people's organs. And those are exactly what the semi-automatic assault weapons and guns do. On the civilian market.
So it's not like you could survive, that anybody could survive
No.
or live any kind of life if they were hit by one of these.
If this young man who was crazy enough, Adam Lance, to kill these children at Newtown, each one of their bodies, I can't say enough what that did to me, had six bullets, and not normal bullets that come out of a regular handgun or a hunting, but bullets that opened up and destroyed their organs. You know, the overkill is so astonishing, it's almost impossible to incorporate emotionally until you hear the parents of these kids speak, and they have loud and clear. They've come out. Newtown Promise, Sandy Hook Promise, is an incredible website for people to go to and see what the parents of these children who were killed have to say about gun issues.
We're talking to Lois Rudnick, who is co-founder of Mothers Opposed to Mayhem, also known as Moms, which has a Facebook page. We'll talk about that at the end. We've talked about legislation and issues that are happening on a national level. We've talked about what's going on with Representative Egolf on a state level, but the city of Santa Fe is also doing some initiatives on a municipal
Yes.
level, and it's so interesting to see how every level of society is responding to the gun violence issue.
It's extraordinary. I mean, everyone has said this, but I have to reiterate it. We have a moment now to make the kind of changes in our gun laws that we did for the automobile industry, as was pointed out
yesterday's program.
And we have to take every advantage of it that we can, and we have to assure legitimate, decent gun owners, who are the majority of people who own guns and who belong to the NRA, that we are not trying to violate their personal freedoms, that we're not trying to eliminate guns in the home, or, you know, rifles for sport or hunting. And the local level, to me, is just extraordinary. Mayor Koss has been doing a fantastic job with, you know, the gun buyback program is never going to get enough guns to eliminate the illegal guns that are out there on the black market or that people already own. We know that as soon as anti-gun violence legislation, you know, came on the national, local, state news, people started to buy more guns in droves, fearful that they would be deprived of them eventually. So ironically, this movement has also led to more gun buying, though it's a minority of Americans who own guns. They own many more guns than they used to 2 decades ago. So Koss has had a 3-day buyback program. The last one is going to be, I think, March 9th, the day before our vigil.
So that's this Saturday, and then the vigil is on Sunday.
And he has also, with Patty Boucher, they are putting, Councilwoman Patty Boucher, they are trying to get a law passed through the city council that would ban magazines of more than 10 pieces of ammunition in the city of Santa Fe. The magazines are of even more important issue than the weapons themselves, because if you have the weapons but the magazine capacity is only 10, which is what most people say is the most you would need if you're hunting deer or elk or whatever, the guns matter less than the magazines do, than the barrels and that hold the number of pieces of ammunition that you can use. So that's an initiative they're going to be working on. I think it's already been introduced, but I think the work on it will really begin when the legislative session is over in the middle of March, I think it is. They will really begin to push this legislation. And Boucher will be at the vigil on Sunday. Brian Egolf will be there, and I'm trying to get some other people to speak as well. And I'd love to talk about the vigil, if that's okay, Mary Charlotte, at this point.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. We have contacted as many people as we can through the League of Women Voters, through our organization. I would love to contact, at this point, some of the schools. We would really love to see as many children as possible there, people bringing signs about the things they care about. It doesn't have to be what we care about. There was a very successful and very powerful march and vigil in Santa Monica in January in California, where children turned in their toy guns to the police force. And I've asked people in my email that I've sent out to about 200 friends and associates at this point, if you have children who are willing to turn in their play guns, I will have somebody from the Santa Fe Police Force there to collect them. And I'm hoping that that will be a possibility. It's a big thing for a kid to be able to do that, I think.
You know, that's an interesting issue, because there were so many, like, hippie parents a generation
right.
or two ago, who were like, my children will never play with guns.
Right.
Well, those kids picked up sticks.
Oh, absolutely.
And they basically did fake gunplay.
Of course. I did too as a child.
I didn't.
Oh, man. Cowboys and Indians, it was horrific. Now that I think back on it, I went to bed with 6 guns when I was a child.
Well, so that was who you were,
yep.
And it is part
right.
of our
it is.
Genetic heritage in one
our
way or another.
Our cultural heritage.
And, well, no, I mean, I think basically there are people who their child has never seen a gun,
right.
never gotten a toy gun, and they still do this behavior. And
oh, no, absolutely.
What I'm getting at is that what has been found over and over is if you let the kids play that stuff out
right.
and are good, nurturing parents and
right.
listen to them, then they actually outgrow it.
I think the good nurturing parents part, Mary Charlotte, is immensely key to the point that you're making. We know from many studies that have been done on children who play a lot of violent video games, who watch a lot of violence on television, that affects their behavior with other children. We know that bullying is one of the biggest problems in our schools today, and the anti-bullying movement may be a great segue, actually, into creating curriculum, anti-violence curriculum. This has to start happening in preschool and go all the way through school. If it's not part of our educational curriculum program, nothing's going to work. Kids should not be banned from playing with guns, and they will find their fingers and stones and sticks, as you say, to play with guns anyway, because their peers are. Why I thought the Santa Monica episode was so moving is that this was a symbolic gesture. This was kids saying, I know that other kids have been killed and hurt by guns. I'm sure they're not giving up all their guns, Mary Charlotte. So I see it as a symbolic gesture where we're teaching our young kids the real ones of these really kill people. You know the difference between reality and fantasy, but not everybody does. Not all kids do, and not all adults do. So I'm not saying that we should stop. I know that that doesn't work. I'm not saying we should stop giving our kids guns or letting them play with guns if they want to.
It's also a kind of interesting thing to me because, again, when you look at kids, there are kids who are just, especially boys mostly, not all, but mostly, who are kind of natural warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And they grow up, and that is their role. They take their place in the armed forces
yeah.
or in the police or other forms of expression where they can exercise that. But the reality that we're living right now, which is so interesting and I think very important to note, is that the grand challenges of our global world right now cannot be solved by a warrior attitude.
No, they can't.
Because those grand challenges are things like pollution, climate change,
mm-hmm.
overpopulation,
right.
you know, really things that you actually need a mind and education and really different methods of thinking
right.
and women's participation in a completely
right.
equal way to solve.
Well, I do think, you know, as an American studies person, I think of a brilliant trilogy that was written in the 70s and 80s by Richard Slotkin, a professor in Connecticut. I think he's at Yale. The first one of his books was called Regeneration Through Violence. The second one I can't remember the title of, and the third one was called Gunfighter Nation. And he starts with the conquest of America, and he talks about the way in which a single individual male confronting savages, aka Indians, confronting nature, confronting the wildness of nature, is so endemic a part of our cultural heritage. If you think of the frontier hero, he's the man who went out in front of everyone else, all those nice little pioneers who came with their families, and he paved the way. He was the Natty Bumppo's pathfinder. He was the one who killed off the Indians so that, you know, nice white settlers could take their land.
And I have to say, when you were talking before to that guy who said, this will lead to genocide, we've had genocide
right.
in this country.
We have, indeed. So it's the gun companies that are creating these ads about what it means to be a man are dealing with an anachronism in terms of the issues we have to face today that you just enunciated, but they are also dealing with an idea of who America is, what America stands for, who our mythological heroes are. You know, these action figures like Rambo who can just take out, who can win the Vietnam War for us in a movie after we lost it, in fact.
Right. Well, so we've got a couple of things left to talk about. This vigil is on Sunday. You're inviting everybody to come, mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers, children, teachers.
Grandchildren.
Everybody who would like to show up. What time is it at and where?
It's at the Plaza, Santa Fe Plaza. It's from noon to 1. Please come with whatever signage you would like. Come with candles. Come just with yourselves if that's what makes you comfortable. We will have legislators and others speaking on gun violence. But mostly it's a way for us to get together and acknowledge how important it is for us as citizens to build a grassroots movement around gun violence, because no major change has ever been made in this country unless it started at the grassroots. Women's rights, civil rights, Chicano rights. You have to have ordinary citizens going to the roundhouse, calling their legislators this week, particularly those who are on the Public Affairs Committee on H.R. 77, the gun transfer law, and asking to be sure that they vote on this positively and that they pass it through the floor of the Senate so we can have the governor sign off on it, and she has agreed to, because it's a bipartisan bill, before the legislature is finished with their session.
Lois Rudnick is co-founder of Mothers Opposed to Mayhem, also known as Moms, which is a Facebook site.
The easiest thing is to just Google capital M, capital O, capital M, capital S, and then in parentheses write Mothers Opposed to Mayhem, and you will find our Facebook page. You don't have to be on Facebook to get there, and we would love you to comment and to like it.
Oh, okay.
And to read all the wonderful things we've posted on the history of gun violence and what is happening now with legislation locally, statewide, and nationally.
And take the quiz. And Lois Rudnick is also a member of New Mexicans for Gun Safety and Professor Emerita of American Studies at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure. Thank you for doing this.